had these ideas of what they wanted to do.
They went to the president.
Yeah, that's where you left off.
At that time, they went to the president and told him that I was interfering with the operation of the department, and that I was not fair to the department head.
Now, Fred Pumphrey was the chairman of the department at that time.
Not fair to the department head, and that therefore they felt that I ought to be relieved of the deanship. Well, the president called for Dr. Murphy, Pumphrey. And Pumphrey came over and he told the president asked Pumphrey about it. I think Pumphrey told the president that they were right, that I overrode here some of his decisions, that I had was not running the way the college should be run, that I was not that he felt that certain things ought to be done and they weren't being done and so forth. And so the president sort of left it to me, see. So I went back to call and sent for Pumphrey. And I said, Fred, I understand that you've gone to the president and you have told the president that there are certain things that you feel ought to be done for the colleges and I wasn't doing them, and that therefore that you felt I was not competent to be the dean. I said, now you are one of the department heads. As such, you sit around this table with the other department heads, and I have never stopped anyone from expressing himself. Can you tell me anything that I've ever done that you have suggested that I have overruled you on? No. Oh, I don't know if he said no, or whether he said I'd rather not discuss it. Well, first I asked him, would you mind telling me what you told the president? And he said no, he would not. I said, well, then I'll tell you what the president told me that you said. So then I mentioned these things to him, and he indicated that he did not want to discuss it with me. I said, all right, Fred. I said, that being the case, as a department head, I have to depend upon my department heads to tell me what I do that isn't proper so that I can correct it. Now, unless you can tell me something like this, I'm going to insist that you resign as department head. Well, he hummed and hawed. I said, I will give you a short time, I don't know what it was, a couple weeks, so possibly, to let me know. At the end of that time, I sent for him, and he again would not tell me anything that I had ever done that might in any way be considered that I overrode any recommendation that he made. I said, Fred, I'm going to give you until the first of the month. At that time, if you do not tell me something that I have done where I've overrode you, or you go to the president and tell him you made a mistake, that I will I will then relieve you of your department headship. At the end of that time, I sent for him, and he said, well, the ASEE, American Society of Engineering Education, are going to have their annual meeting here in at the university in another few weeks, and as you know, I'm very active in that organization. Would you wait until after that meeting? I said, yes, I'll do that. But at that time, you will either resign or I will demote you. I will remove you as department head and go back, you will have your status as professor. Well, that's what happened, MC. That's what happened. Well, you know, I then asked him to call a meeting of his department, and a meeting with I don't know whether he did it or whether I called it, but we had a meeting of his department. and at the meeting of the department, I read a letter which I said I had sent to Mr. Pumphrey, Professor Pumphrey, in which I stated that in view of the fact that I knew that he was very active in writing a book and in other activities, I felt that he would prefer to use his time on these activities rather than on the administrative work as a department head, and therefore I'm therefore relieving him of those activities. And
so you gave him a graceful way out.
After I read the letter to the faculty, he got up and he wanted to speak. He said, "That's not the case at all. I do not want to be relieved of a department head. See?" And I said, and I just walked out of the room. See? Immediately, one of his cohorts got up and wanted to pass a resolution. The faculty backing him. Well, it was voted down by a tremendous vote. See? And so, then Fred was demoted, and relieved of his responsibilities, and he taught there for about another year and a half, and then he received a invitation to consider a position at Alabama Polytechnic Institute, which he took as dean of there. So,
and that's where he is now.
And I think that the five people that he had, of all, one of them remained, did a very good job, and is now a dean at University of Alabama. The other four, three of them have done outstandingly well at other schools, and one of them has done well technically, but he's belonged to one of these lunatic fringes, as I call it, of political aspects in California. But that was the story of Mr. Pumphrey. Well, it hurt me because Fred and I were very good friends. Our families were close. And I was caught in that peculiar situation where I had to do what I thought was an administrative responsibility, and yet doing something which would hurt an individual. And yet the individual who had I gave the individual every chance in the world to overcome the difficulty, mm-hmm. and he threw him away. So that, I thought that
Fred Pumphrey is still living, I think.
Yes, and we see each other, and he's very friendly. I think he realizes that if he were in my position and I were in his position that he was at that time, that he'd have probably done the same thing. He was just lost by this little group of people that he brought in who were running away with themselves. Under proper leadership, I think it would be very, very good for Pumphrey to have continued there, and these people continued there working harmoniously with the rest of the faculty.
You said that there were three incidents in your life which harassed you, and you've given me two of them.
Well, the other one, there may have been more, those are three I can think. Well, the other one
you
I
gave me two.
Two. The heck, well, at the moment I can't think of the third.
Of course I know I'm wearing you out.
No, that's all right, because I'm happy that we're doing this. Because the other thing that I think...
Would you rather wait?
This will be a short one. The other thing I think was bothersome to me was I had made quite a reputation of in the nuclear field in the state of Florida. I think I was one of the... I'm a charter member of the American Nuclear Society. And I was responsible with my faculty for setting up what was the first second college reactor in the United States. The first one was at NYU. It's what they call a small pickle barrel reactor. And so I felt that very sincerely that the state of Florida's economic well-being hinged in no small measure upon Florida taking an active part in the development of nuclear energy. And I went around the state and I gave many talks to chambers of commerce and Rotary clubs on that subject. They were all well received. I suggested to the university, to Dr. Allen, who was acting president, that we put in something in the university budget for that. And he refused to do that. So that being the case, I had to let it go from that standpoint. But I did not stop making speeches telling about the importance of nuclear energy to the state of Florida. So he calls me in, Dr. Allen calls me in and said, didn't I tell you that we're not going to put anything in there about that, in the budget for that? I said, yes, sir. I said, but I'm not asking that anything be put in the budget for nuclear energy. I said, I still feel, as a professional man, that it's my responsibility to express how I feel on the importance of this subject. And insofar as the development of the state is concerned, whether we do research at the university or whether we have anything in the budget of the university or not. Well, I don't think you ought to make those speeches. And we left it at that, but I kept making the speeches. So the next thing I got was an order that I appear before the Board of Control, at St. Petersburg in order to for a hearing. So I went to the board meeting and I sat there. Alan was sitting there, the chairman was over there, and the chairman says said to me, he said, now Dr. Allen has indicated that, and he went on to say that I'd gone around the state and made these speeches, that I'd been told by him that there was no money in the budget for this. Is that correct? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, do you think you should have done that? I said, yes, sir. I said, I feel that there is, that I have not in any way, at any time, asked in any of these speeches that there be any request made that the university make funds available just for nuclear energy. All I am saying is that it is important to the welfare of the state that everything be done as soon as possible in order to take advantage of what nuclear energy might mean to the state. So then there was a little discussion and so forth, and finally the chairman of the board said, well, I don't see why we have anything to censure Professor Weil on. He said, and so on. He said, and I move adjourn, get lunch. So I said, excuse me. I said, but I do have one question to ask. May I continue to make my speeches? He said, well, we can't tell you not to. And they invited me to have lunch with them. Well, the next day, the Tampa Tribune comes out with a big headline, "While reprimanded by Board of Control." Well, I got swamped by the engineers of the state, calling up, you know, wanting to know, what the heck is this about you being reprimanded? What'd you do? So when they found out it, they hopped on the chairman of the board.
And you hadn't really reprimanded you anyway.
No. And so he told him, he said, reprimand him? Hell, we asked him to have lunch with us. So he said, certainly if we reprimand him, we wouldn't have asked him to have lunch with him. So he said, I feel we should commend him on his activities.
But Allen then backed off.
Well, he couldn't, Allen couldn't do anything. I mean, I wasn't going to stop making my speeches.
And Allen then left here and went down to the University of South Florida anyway.
Well, when Miller came, he stayed with Miller for a while. Okay, but And I said, we did research or something like that.
Yes, you bring your faculty into it.
I'm not trying to take credit for it, because if you look back, you'll find that I've never taken patents out. I've never done, that is, my general philosophy has been, I've had many ideas. I may start something and then turn it over to somebody. You see what I mean? And they do it. But you see, I would like, for example, to bring out the fact how we use these students. Now, a lot of this research was done by students, not even graduate students in many cases. And how these people now are in many of them in very important positions. President of the Florida Power Corporation, for example. The head of the FCC station in Florida for monitoring all the radio business and so forth. Then another thing that I would like to bring out sometime is that we have turned out 13 deans for other engineering schools.
Which is in itself a very creditable record.
Well, for example, I'd like to bring in the fact that Tiger said, called me in one day and said, how are we losing all these people? All these good people that get good jobs elsewhere. I said, sure. I said, in most cases, I'll recommend them. He said, well, can you afford to lose these people? I said, well, let's take some examples. They left me, but I put other people in their place. Are they good? They're excellent people. I said, what do you think I'm getting my graduate students from?
That's right.
See? Well, those are a couple of things there. And then I'd like to tell you a little about Hawkshaw with his dog and some of the little anecdote or so there. And following up possibly on the importance of this universe. I mean, I think it ought to be shown somewhere that the university part in helping industry means that we raise the level of our staff far beyond what we could do if the only money we got was for teaching. You see what I mean?
I see what you mean.
In other words, if I got $64,000 to run the whole cockeyed college, now if I had waited before I could do something till I got the money to hire another man and so on like that. But it's by getting these contracts and things like that.
You generated money.
We generate money. Now, the fortunate thing was that the university, although I got 50% overhead, for many years the university let me keep that 50%. Afterwards, they said, well, wait, you got to pay for the library, you get money for the library, this, that. So then we agreed 50-50, see. And that grinner, that used to break Grinner's heart, that I got this 50%. That's what he wanted to get to run his graduate school, for which I don't blame him at all. That's the only place he had to get money. So these are some of the things that I think might be good.
Let's stop.